We always like to catch up with our elected officials, especially face-to-face, and we're grateful for the time when it happens. Eric Russell, who's state treasurer, joining us here in studio. How's it going?
All is well, Brian. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I feel like my family's all over the place, so it's like summertime. I don't feel like summer started yet.
And the weather isn't really helping with that feeling either. But
do you get to take time? Like, do you like? Have you had a vacation in 3 years? Or
We try to get away. It's mostly weekend stuff when we can do it. But good to be through session. That's always a particularly busy time for us, and it's nice to have a little bit of a reset. For now, for us, we get busy. Now it's implementing things that happen during session, and then also just getting ready for fiscal year end. So things are busy, but we'll make some time when we get a chance.
I have so much to talk about with you. I almost don't know where to start. But you know, you mentioned the budget. When they talk about taking some of the excess and not using it to pay down the pension debt and and plus it's your party that's talking about that. Does that make you nervous though, because of all the great progress like we've made? And you'd kind of want to see it keep going?
Well, I think it doesn't make me nervous how we've walked through this. I think it's important that we're having conversations around addressing our long-term debt, continuing to move the state forward in a fiscally responsible way while making investments in people that are also really important. And we have been in compliance with our guardrails. I'm very attentive to that, as our office really is works very closely. We maintain the bond covenant that requires us to abide by those guardrails. And I think what we saw this session is working closely with the governor, with the legislature, how to make some changes that are allowable under the guardrails that allow us to continue to pay down debt.
Are they siphoning some of that off, though? Is that going to happen?
Well, we adjusted the volatility cap. So we increased that. We've seen over the last several years that we've amassed a lot of extra money in that volatility cap. What the governor and legislature did is what is authorized by the guardrails, or allowable under the guardrails, is to make that adjustment so that we could use some of those resources to make investments. But we are still in compliance with the guardrails.
So there's two questions on this. One is, you know, where are we on the debt side?
Yep.
Like, what's the status of it in terms of the liability and our trajectory and all that?
Yeah, so nothing has changed in terms of our trajectory on the unfunded pension liability. We are continuing to make a lot of progress there. We've paid down over $8 billion in additional contributions to our pension fund. After this fiscal year, we expect that we're going to have another $1 billion-plus contribution that's going to go into
regardless of the budget. That's going to happen.
Correct. Okay. And we are on path again with this budget to continue to have these additional contributions to go toward our long-term debt.
If you stayed at this pace, when would you be like back to square one?
Yeah. So we re-amortized our pension debt back in 2019. And so what we were projected is we had a 30-year pay down, and that's what our pay down schedule is right now. Even with these additional contributions, it is still that same timeline to be fully funded. What we're doing is we're getting there more quickly by making these additional contributions.
It's almost like paying down a mortgage.
Exactly.
Your mortgage payment stays the same, but Exactly. You're going to keep the timetable the same, but maybe the payments have to be less.
Exactly. So what these additional contributions have done is they've lowered what we have to pay in on an annual basis by the tune of about $800 million. So that allows us to use more money out of the general fund to actually invest in people, but also as we've lowered the tax burden in recent years as well.
Matt, where am I on time? Okay, so I'll ask about the investment side on the other side, plus a whole bunch of other stuff. We're here with Eric Russell, state treasurer, in studio. The one thing I hadn't seen lately, you know, obviously you sort of inherited a great situation with some of the investment returns. That story that Sonnenfeld did down with Yale was huge national news. It's been a couple years now. I think things have stabilized. I don't know if you try to track the market or not, but just give people an update on the returns.
Yeah, so the returns have been strong. We've been doing a lot of work in terms of really turning the pension fund around, a lot of work around new asset allocation. We have a really strong investment team that we've been recruiting and making sure we're holding on to. We've worked really closely with the legislature and the governor to make some changes to give the office more flexibility, and we're seeing that play out from a return perspective. This last calendar year, we performed at over 10 and a quarter for the pension fund. We were at about 12.8% for the prior calendar year.
It was like the S&P was higher, right? But you have to balance things out.
Well, the S&P is a purely U.S. market, yeah. and as we've seen in some of the volatility right now, the S&P has been really down significantly. We invest globally, so we're a globally diversified portfolio with the idea of making sure that we can have strong returns for our pensioners over a long period of time, and that's really what our goal here is.
Yeah, I mean, be honest, like if you're 2 or 3x inflation, you're doing great, and you obviously compare to the cohort with the other states. I mean, we're no longer 49th, I'm assuming.
No, not at all. We've actually been over the last few years, we've been in the top quartile very consistently for performance. And so, again, our goal here is to make sure that we have long-term sustained performance. I think we're in a really good spot, but we're going to continue to do the work to move us in the right direction.
Let's talk about a couple of things coming out of the legislative session. I didn't know a lot about it until I sort of read into it. The Safe Harbor Initiative, it's a bit of a political hot button for some people. It's in the budget. Explain what it is and also explain that it's not state money that's paying for it.
Sure. So the Safe Harbor Fund was a concept I developed back in 2022 after Roe v. Wade was overturned. And the idea is that there are individuals that are in many states that don't have the ability to access reproductive health care. And this is a commitment that we've made very firmly here in Connecticut. I also know that the individuals who are not from those anti-choice states, who are not going to be able to jump on a flight and go and travel somewhere they need to, are going to be people who have less resources, less means. It's going to be minority communities. And so the idea with the Safe Harbor Fund is that these resources can help individuals who are traveling from those states with some of the collateral costs, travel expenses, lodging, maybe childcare for when they need to get from their state to a state that they can access the care that they need. All of these funds are going to be raised privately. So we have a coalition.
So why are you involved at all?
Because we're going to be creating the fund in Connecticut. I'll be able to invest those funds to make sure that we are keeping the fund solvent. But I'm also leading the charge with other treasurers all across the country so that we have a coalition of states where people can go and access the care that they need. And so we have about 8 or 9 states that are already signed on to this that are going to be moving legislation to create similar funds in their state. And the idea is that an individual from an anti-choice state would be able to reach out and be connected with a state where they could get the care that they need most easily.
And it's definitely, it's in the budget. So it was, I mean, Lamont wouldn't line item it out. So you're assuming it's going to happen, correct?
Correct. We're in good shape. We had broad support, including from the governor around the creation of this fund. And
so what's the timetable then? When will it be established? And I'm curious from just a curiosity level, yep. Don't mean to interrupt you. Like, will somebody in say Texas, how will they go to the, where do they go? Do they go to a site and then they fill out a form? And like, how is that actually going to work?
Yeah, so it would ultimately be all of this is the care is going to be provided through existing local providers. So we would issue grants out of this fund to providers in Connecticut who would actually be communicating with an individual coming to get care. The ideal eventually is other states are building this out and we have this broader coalition is that someone would be able to call, say, a 411 saying they need care and then be connected to the state that would be best for them.
Now, we're talking with Eric Russell, state treasurer. The child care endowment is something totally different.
That's correct.
Okay. So tell me about that.
Yeah. So the child care, it's an early child care endowment, which is, this was an initiative that was in the governor's budget, at least to start. There was a lot of evolution because there was similar legislation that was introduced by the Senate, as well as a House bill. And this is kind of the compilation of all of those initiatives. What we're doing is taking excess funds that would be surplus in the budget, and we're going to move that into the child care endowment on an annual basis.
But I thought there's no excess in the budget.
Well, so these will be, there will be unappropriated surplus before the end of the fiscal year, that if whatever those amounts are going to end up being moved into this early child care endowment.
And what is it going to be for?
So it will be the goal of ultimately establishing universal child care in Connecticut. So the idea is these funds are going in. It is going to be used for all of the state's kind of Head Start programs, but for all families as of fiscal year 2028, all families making under $100,000 a year will have access to early child care at zero cost to that family.
And this fund, the endowment will pay for it?
Correct. So the endowment is we will be investing those funds and the idea is we're spending what is ultimately earned and spun off of that endowment so that we have, one, we're providing affordable and accessible care to families and children in the state, that we have a sustainable way of funding it, and that we're really expanding the childcare industry, creating more childcare spots and supporting the childcare workforce in Connecticut.
What kind of dollars do you expect to have in the fund by 28?
So we'll have, we expect a little over $200 million is going to be transferred this fiscal year. And then we'll see what that surplus is going to be on an annual basis. This is a long-term goal, though. And I think what this says a lot about the folks involved, the governor, and Marty Looney, CeCe Marr, Kate Farrar, Corey Paris, were all very involved in building this out. But the idea is that we are going to be able to establish a fund that has a sustainable way of funding early childcare. We know how big this is in terms of an economic driver in the state, and we know how cost prohibitive childcare has been for so many families.
I'm a huge fan of the endowment concept when it comes to this stuff. My head hurts with all the shell game with the money. I don't understand. We just went through this whole budget process. Yep. We had to cut all the spending to fit this and fit that. But yet you're telling me that we're throwing off $200 million between now and 28. I just don't understand that.
Well, one thing I would say to keep in mind is we still have a spending cap in Connecticut and within our budget. So this is not fun. These aren't funds that we would have been able to spend on other programming otherwise. Part of the reason this works is because we're not appropriating these dollars that are going into
the endowment. What would happen to the money if you didn't have the program?
The surplus would ultimately move through the waterfall and be used to pay down debt. This is part of that change to the volatility cap that I mentioned, was so that we had additional surplus that we would be able to move
into. So this money would have helped pay down the pension liability, but it's going to this.
Correct. And okay. But I would also say, keep in mind, we still, to the tune of billions of dollars, are making these additional contributions.
I'm not judging it. I just want to understand it.
But yeah. I think there's been some confusion about how that's been talked about, as if we are no longer prioritizing paying down debt, when the reality is that, again, in this year, we're going to have $1 billion+ that we still use to pay down unfunded pension liability.
Yeah, I mean, you're still being prioritized more than just about any other government since the 50s or what have you. We're here with Eric Russell, state treasurer here on Bryan & Company. You know, I wanted to take a step back and take a couple minutes. You're pretty transparent about the personal stuff, and I want to get to more of the professional stuff, but you know, I'm not going to go through my whole rant about the immigration situation. I'm not a religious person, but I was born Jewish, and I see the anti-Semitism. The stuff seems to be ratcheted up with immigration and with anti-Semitism. And I don't know about the LGBT. You know, we just got through Pride Week, and I'm curious if you feel any differently about the environment, if you feel any less comfortable or less nervous or anxious, or is it good and the same?
So, listen, I think where the country is right now, there's a tone and a rhetoric that has certainly been worse. And I think it crosses a lot of lines, including the LGBTQ community.
Because I feel like it hasn't been discussed as much as the other groups that are under.
For sure. And I think we're very fortunate here in Connecticut that we have led the way in terms of protecting people in our state and letting people know that regardless of what background you come from or who you are or who you love or how you identify, that you're going to be protected here in Connecticut. But I will tell you, we've seen an unprecedented number of bills that have been proposed this year coming after the LGBTQ community, the trans community in particular. And so I think as the rhetoric has ratcheted up across the country, along a lot of lines, I think people do feel uncomfortable, and that we do understand that there's been kind of a backslide for a lot of different.
The trans issue is so tough because I know a lot of people who consider themselves very progressive who are say like should they be playing sports like this? Should they get titles and I think the hard part is for me, like, I want to have open dialogues, and I think that a lot of people I know who are on the more liberal side, they feel very uncomfortable voicing it because they don't want to get crushed. But I do think, like, I think people can be what they want and do what they want. But I think that specific conversation, I think, merits an open conversation, because I think there is a fairness debate to be had. Yeah. And I don't know what the answer is. I always said, like, everyone should be able to compete, but maybe they can't have records or state titles or whatever. But I don't even know if that's the way it is. But I mean, that to me as a host, as a person on the air, is a hard conversation.
Well, I think even past the sports thing, I think one thing that people have been frustrated with is the idea that we are talking about such a small number of people in the state, in the community more broadly, and it has this huge outsize kind of conversation around it. But I think at its core, and I think particularly for where we are right now, what people want is for individuals in the trans community and in the LGBTQ community more broadly is just to be humanized and treated with dignity and respect. And
but what if you want that and you support that, but you're not comfortable with the sports
thing? And that's fine. But I think where we are right now is we've seen such a huge backslide on the other side of this. We have seen the Trevor Project, which is an LGBT focus group. They have a crisis hotline. After the election, they saw a 700% increase in calls to that hotline. The National Suicide Prevention Hotline, they have an LGBTQ line. They've seen, they were getting 2,400 calls a day from the suicide hotline within the LGBTQ community. I think so much, we saw national ads run against the trans community. So much of this is about first seeing people as humans and treating people with respect. I think all of the other conversations people are more than willing to have, but I think that that's where we need to start.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a big conversation. I think that's fair. I think the implementation or execution of that kind of dynamic is where it gets difficult. But I do appreciate being able to talk about it because I think that there are so many aspects that are very difficult to discuss. We're back here with Eric Russell, State Treasurer here in Bryan and Company. I have three fundamental things. I have other things that I want to get to. I'm going to sort of let you choose. I wanted the conversation we just had off mic, the $1,000 for kids born in the federal budget compared to baby bonds, that's one. Two is I'm just curious about talking about the federal debt and when the chickens are going to come home to roost or not.
Absolutely.
And third is your potential reelection. Those are three things I want to get through. Great. In 7 minutes. Which okay. one do you want first?
Whatever works for you.
No, you tell me. You pick it. Yeah. The wheel's spinning. You pick one.
Let's start with the federal budget and the deficit.
Okay, so I'm a deficit hawk, and I worked at CNBC during the Great Recession, and nobody thought that would ever happen, and it happened. And so I know that it's possible for our debt to eventually consume our country and servicing the debt what it is now. I would be way more supportive even of Medicaid cuts if we were taking across-the-board cuts if it went toward balancing the budget or paying down the debt and the deficit, and it's not. So that's my problem.
Yep.
And so I'm curious about your thoughts, you know, because the Democrats have been just as guilty, some say more, but all administrations dating back to Clinton have added to the debt and the deficit. So I was curious about your take on it.
Yeah, I think the deficit is a real problem. We're at about $36 trillion now for the U.S. deficit, and our servicing on that deficit is now outpacing what we spend on defense on an annual basis. It's a big problem. What I will say, and I think the bigger issue, is if you look at what has been proposed from a budget perspective in Washington right now, you have a gutting of the social safety net for so many people. So cuts to Medicaid, food assistance, special education. And the goal of all of this is ultimately to
provide tax cuts.
A big tax cut for millionaires and billionaires. And to your point, we're doing that at the expense of adding trillions of dollars to the deficit. What I think that is a tax on young people. It's the tax on my generation and generations to come as we kick the can down the road and then have to deal with it. And I think it's really just in stark contrast to what we've done here in Connecticut over time. We went about 70 years without paying into our pensions and doing right by taxpayers. And we have been in the process of digging ourselves out of that hole. But what we see right now in Washington is the polar opposite. And I think it's going to be really problematic moving forward.
So how do you take that first step to start digging out of that hole? Because that's all it really takes is there's nobody, I mean, maybe some of these conservative Republicans, but they'll eventually just fall in line, I think. But how do you take that first step to digging out of it?
Passing a balanced budget, and rather than adding trillions of dollars to the deficit, have the top 1% pay their fair share of taxes.
So is it House leadership? Can the president, like, how does that actually get it? Because I know Gingrich sort of forced Clinton's hand, so that was, it was, and the same thing as 2017, it was competitive government that made it happen, but a competitive government in D.C. is not making that happen.
Well, I would just say right now, I don't think it's, until Congress is willing to step up and have a backbone around what the president is doing, we're not going to see any progress. It doesn't matter what's in this budget. We have budget hawks in on the Republican side of Congress right now that will still ultimately fall in line and vote for a budget that's completely out of balance and that adds to the deficit. I think until that changes, until people step up and really drive the need for that change, we're not going to see much happen.
Yeah, and I talk to people all the time. They're cutting spending, but they're kind of cut revenue by more. and tariffs aren't going to make up the difference. I mean, ultimately, that's the truth.
And I don't know that they're cutting spending. They're cutting spending in certain places, but they're also spending a lot more in others. I think what we've seen is this shift where we are harming working people, working poor, middle-class folks at the expense of the wealthy.
I'm going to call an audible then, because I get into this, even with Senator Murphy, when I was talking to him when he was doing his walk. The Democrats don't seem to get it. Right, they haven't figured out how to coalesce and come together and figure out what's the proposal on the other side. I think there's a real opportunity to do that, whether it's trying to come up with a more sensible budget. You know, for the party that you belong to, is it frustrating at all that there's not a lot of bona fide alternatives being put forth? Everyone's just telling us what Trump's doing is terrible.
Well, I think there are proposals that are being put forward. I think the hard part is that we know that there is no movement in Washington right now unless the president says that he wants something different. And Democrats don't have the numbers. I think there's been a lot of talks on how to change policy. I think even if you look at policy proposals that were put forth by Kamala Harris during the campaign, to your point, the budget was not going to be balanced as is. With what was proposed, but the deficit that was being added was significantly less than what's being proposed right now. And it wasn't at the expense of working people. It was at the making sure that we weren't just cutting taxes for the wealthy. Yeah.
I don't want to get into the
I know we can. There's a lot to talk
so
about.
So maybe
here,
I shouldn't have called the audible. I want to go back to the line of scrimmage and change it again. The baby bonds thing, you were telling me off mic that what they're proposing in the government, because that was like $1,000 per kid, that's great. And you're like, wait, maybe not.
Well, I just want to make clear that it's not what we're doing around baby bonds here in Connecticut, which is the idea is it's about addressing wealth inequality and creating more opportunity for people to lift themselves out of poverty in a meaningful way. Under these Trump accounts that are being proposed on the federal level, it's $1,000 to every child that's born. And I'm not saying that there could not be some benefit to a child savings account for individuals. What I would say is that, one, it's a short-term program. It's only proposed for a four-year basis, so it's not long-term. It doesn't address wealth inequality and actually has the ability to exacerbate the problem in that you're giving everyone the same amount of money. So it's not leveling the playing field for those that don't have resources and actually allows people with a lot of resources to benefit more by putting more money into these accounts. And frankly, the dollar amount isn't significant enough that it would be impactful at the point that individuals would have access to it. And so I just want to be clear about that it's not baby bonds and that I don't think it is intended to meet the same goal either.
Well, I think it's similar to the tax cuts. The tax cuts are actually for everybody, but on a proportional level, it benefits the wealthy more. I think that needs to be pointed out. The tax cuts aren't just for the wealthy. They just benefit a little more based on relative to their wealth and their earnings. I mean, right? I mean, that's
the, yeah, I would say a lot more.
Right,
I mean,
but the tax cut is – are you going to run for a second term?
That's my plan. So I haven't made a formal or official decision, but I'm planning to.
If Lamont didn't run, would you run for governor?
No. I'm excited to continue the work that we're doing in the treasurer's office right now. I think there's still a lot that I want to follow through on. And I think we're doing a good job of making things happen. So I'm looking forward to continuing that.
So you are going to run again? Good. Okay. Good. Not good that you're running again. Good that you said that, because it's good for us to get that on our air. Anything else in 30 seconds you want people to know about? What do you got? Any events? Anything happening? Anything?
There's a lot kicking around, so we'll be closing up fiscal year end. We have a lot going around on the investment side. We've been doing a lot of work on the baby bonds front, working with a lot of our partners in collaboration with some philanthropy as we're building out the program and really maximizing it, working with some other states that are very interested in baby bonds. And so we've been helping other folks that are looking to kind of build out and launch their legislation. We have a lot kicking around, though. I think we had a good legislative session. I think there are a lot of things that are going to really, you know, be beneficial to folks in Connecticut long term, while also balancing and continuing to address our longstanding fiscal challenges. So I think we're making progress.
State Treasurer Eric Russell, we always appreciate you coming in. Thanks for your time.
Likewise. Thank you.